Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the Above All, There's Hope, My Journey with Prostate Cancer. I'm Mark Johnson.
And I'm Jill Johnson.
And welcome. So this one we're calling Deer in the Headlights, You've Got Cancer. I think you might be able to imagine what that might be. One of the things I wanted to do for this one, though, is a little housekeeping that we've kind of forgotten in the midst of the excitement of getting this going. And I want to give you the website address, which is www.abovealltheresHope.com, www.abovealltheresHope.com. And for the moment, that's the only place you can get the podcast. We're working on getting it on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Also, credit where credit is due. And this is a group of now great friends, in the past people I've worked with over time. And I'm calling us the ###, media group. And it's Ralph Jones is the executoid producer. Bob Ross is graphic design and logo. Mark Morrell, a.k.a. Blind Turnip Green, created that awesome music that you hear on the front end and the back end. And Ben English has been working like a maniac to help get the website and the podcast together so that we could actually release it. And he'll be the guy that's helping us get it with Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. So major props to Ben English at this point. And then production support are people who represent some of the various manufacturers of some of the gear that we're using for this. Lee Whitmore for the Focusrite Group, Ryan White from Rode, Greg McVeigh from Heil Sound, Martina McConnon from Austrian Audio, and then Omar Mendez from O Marvelous Productions, who edited the videos that you see on the website. So props to all these guys. There's absolutely no way we could have gotten this off the ground without the help of these people. And that's the major thing. It's the people that are involved. Anyway, moving on. When I first started out with the concept of this podcast, and I came up with the title, Above All, There's Hope, My Journey with Prostate Cancer, that's kind of where I was in my head. Okay, well, you know, I'll do this as my journey. And then as the concept progressed, it became more evident both to Jill and I that it's actually going to be about our journey with prostate cancer. Jill has been there every step of the way. So we'll keep the title as is, but having Jill participate is important as we talk about our hopes, fears, fear of the unknown, small triumphs, disappointments, and learning as we go. So with that, I'm actually going to turn it over to Jill because she has some things to say.
Boy, do I. You know, I told Mark that we need to address this, and I read him what I'm going to read to you, and he was like, you talk about it. I don't want to. Well, my niece was here this weekend, and she listened to the podcasts, and she's a podcast listener, so we had a couple of friends of mine that came by to just listen to the podcast to kind of critique it and tell us what they thought about it. Well, my niece, Nina, said after she listened to the first episode, she said, hey, so what is a prostate? And we were like, oh boy, that's a great question. So what a prostate is, I kind of knew what it did, but I didn't really know what it was. I knew that after Mark had his removed, that the liquid that he would ejaculate during an orgasm, there wasn't any. So it was a really clean sex act at that point. I'm sorry for the graphic language, but so I'll read you what a prostate is. The prostate is a small rubbery gland about the size of a ping pong ball located deep inside the groin between the base of the penis and the rectum. It is important for reproduction because it supplies part of the seminal fluid, which mixes with sperm from the testes. And, you know, that's what it did. That's what it does. And so without that fluid that mixes with the sperm, there is no liquid that shoots out.
Shoots out?
Yeah, at an orgasm. So there would be no way to become pregnant without that fluid. It's a very important part of reproduction. And so I guess, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to tell you. It's a little tiny thing with a really big, important job. Without the prostate, there wouldn't be any reproduction. So,
one of my doctors said it was, described it, well, in part of the way he described it as about looking like a little walnut.
Yeah.
But the tricky thing about the prostate is that it actually encompasses, I believe, the urethra. So when they do surgery, they have to basically, in order to cut it out, they have to basically cut your urethra in order to get it out, completely out. And again, I suppose many men are kind of cringing at the moment, and I kind of am as well explaining it. And then they actually have to put it back together. For radiation, whether they do seeds or they irradiate it with beams, then it's a little different, and it basically shrivels up. In my case, actually, it caused some further complications that we can talk about later in perhaps another episode. But that's kind of what the prostate is and what it does and where it is. So it's in a, not only is it a critical organ, it's in a critical place and very difficult to remove, which is why the surgery is the robotic surgery or any kind of treatment is actually very precise and targeted.
So we have a really good photo of the prostate and where it is in the body. And if you Google it, which is what I did, you can see where it is and how difficult it might be to remove. There's one little part that I would also like to read that I kind of said, but this explains it better than I could speak it. The prostate's most important function is the production of a fluid that, together with sperm cells from the testicles and fluid from other glands, make up semen. The mucus of the prostate also ensure that the semen is forcefully pressed into the urethra and then expelled outward during ejaculation. So that's it in a nutshell.
When you say walnut in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's a walnut in a nutshell.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's a ping pong ball.
Yeah. Either way is no fun. Yeah. So there can be many jokes about ping pong balls and nutcrackers and things like that I'd rather avoid. So
that's what a prostate is.
Right.
So for Nina, there you have it.
Okay. Did you have anything else to add, Jill?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, at least at this point. So the thing we talked about in the last episode was how to test or not to test and the tests available, and that the only true indicator of whether or not there's prostate cancer is a biopsy. And I think, as I mentioned, a biopsy is no fun. What they do is they actually stick a little probe up your rear end and nip off pieces all around the prostate, little pieces, I think 12 pieces to be exact, and they put them in, you know, specimen containers and send them off to be evaluated. And then they indicate where they are in the prostate, and then once they come back, or once they're evaluated, they can kind of map out where the cancer is. So in my case, about half of my prostate was had tumors, cancerous tumors in it, to one degree or another. And so that was kind of the alarm signal for the doctor. The other thing that they do at that point is they assign it a thing called the Gleason score. That was developed in the 60s by a guy named Dr. Donald Gleason. Again, there we are with the score thing. You know, you think a score is a positive thing. I've made a score. No, in this case, it ranges, I believe, from like 2 up to 10, although scores kind of are meaningful after 6. So a Gleason score that ranges from 6 to 10, that's kind of the range. Well, I just said that. And 6 designates a low-grade cancer, 7 is intermediate, and 8 to 10 is a high-grade cancer. My Gleason score was 9, so I'm right in the middle of a high-grade cancer. And at this point, I guess to provide the doctors or other people more information, they also rate it by grade groups. So low to very low would be a grade group 1, and that means a Gleason of less than or equal to 6. Intermediate grade group 2 and 3 would be a Gleason 7, and high to very high would be grade group 4 and 5 would be Gleason 9 to 10. I believe that's what it says. So with all that information, my doctor, armed with all that information, came back to us and called us into his office and said those fateful words, "You have cancer," and you know, I feel for the doctors because they have to say this how many times, I don't know. And it must be heartbreaking for the doctors as well as for the patients. That's a tough one to say. And so if you want to know what the doctor said to us after he said, "You have cancer," I actually have no idea, because at that point, those words, "You have cancer," it just kind of resonate in and around your head. You know, they got stuck on my words. So it was, you know, as you can imagine, it could be earth-shattering. However, he kept urging us not to worry, because that was his job. And I guess in a way, I'm really thankful for his calm, cool demeanor in all of this. He was and is, in my mind, a great doctor, and I still have him as a doctor, and I see him every 3 months or so. So he It was at that point, it was an overload of information. And Jill, you might want to take over at this point, because this is kind of what you did in reality.
So I wanted to ask a question. The biopsy was no fun, but it was not painful, was it?
No, it wasn't painful for me. It was uncomfortable, but it wasn't painful. But I know other people who have gone through biopsies who have said that they were painful. So they
do biopsies?
Yeah, they do inject you with a painkiller, and because of where it's located in the icky zone, they give you tons and tons of antibiotics, because they've basically pulled out pieces of your prostate as it sits in the icky zone, which is, you know.
Well, I wanted to ask that because I recall that you went in, you didn't have any pain, and you came out and you really didn't have any pain. So for those that are really afraid of getting this biopsy or, you know, continuing to
if you recall, you were even out of town. I think you were tending to your parents.
Oh, I was.
You were very concerned. And
I was mad. I wanted him to wait until I got home.
Right. And I wanted to get on with it.
Nothing.
I wanted to get on with it. And actually, it was our good friend Ben English that took me to the doctor and brought me home and checked to make sure that I was going to be okay. And I think that the different results, I guess people would have different results how they deal with a biopsy. Like I said, mine was uncomfortable during the biopsy, but everything else afterwards was fine, and I dutifully took my my antibiotic. Everything was good.
So when the doctor told Mark he had cancer, that was the very real look of the deer in the headlights. It was such a shock. I think, as we had said earlier, Mark's brother had been tested and just found to have had an enlarged prostate, so that's kind of what we were expecting. But when the doctor said, "You have cancer," Mark was like shocked. I didn't know if he was going to faint or what he was going to do. I was so busy watching his reaction and shocked myself, you know, just thinking, oh boy, what does this mean? Oh, what's going to happen? Oh my gosh. You know, oh Lord, help us. And I mean, you just don't know what you're going to do at that point until you're actually at that point. And so, yeah, the doctor was really good about it, and I believe he has a history of prostate cancer in his family. So this wasn't something that was foreign to him. I believe his dad had prostate cancer, and he's testing himself often to make sure that he's okay. So he was just very encouraging, very helpful to us. And, you know, I mean, they can say, go home, don't worry, think about your options. And, you know, he gave us some options, have it removed. Check to see if you'd like to do radiation. You can have it removed surgically, or you can have it removed robotically. These are your options. So just go home and think about it, pray about it, and decide what you might want to do. Well, I decided I didn't even want to think about it. I didn't really want anything to do about it. I just wanted to kind of ignore it. And it took several days to sort of process what we had just found out. And
yeah, we both wound up kind of shutting down. But I think at some point you kicked into high gear and started doing a lot of research and things like that, while I was kind of still overwhelmed.
Yeah, I started to feel like I needed to do some research, and he didn't really want to know what I was uncovering. I mean, really, neither did I. But I was like, what are we up against here? So anyway, that was sort of how we were. We were probably both deer in headlights. And I'd say it wasn't until probably a week later did I shed a tear. After about a week, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want you to have cancer. I don't want this to be our story. I don't like this. And
hey, what about me?
I don't remember. That was all about me, me, me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're kind of in your own head. Just kind of in your own head. What's next? What's going to happen? Is he going to live? Is he going to, We just really did not know.
Yeah, I think at that point we were seeing the doctor pretty regularly, and he actually did as good a job as he could do reassuring us that everything is going to be okay, and I should live, for quite a while. And actually, even when I started seeing my medical oncologist just about a year or so ago, he kind of reiterated to me that we're going to be friends for a long time.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if you can be friends with your doctor, right. Hey bud, let's go out for some beers, but wait. Wait until after you do the surgery or something, I don't know. But
something else that was just the difference in the way Mark processes and I process. I like to talk about it. I like to tell people. I like to, get people's opinions. I like people to know what I'm going through, what I'm struggling with. So I immediately wanted to just tell my family, tell my girlfriends, have people start praying for us. And Mark didn't want anyone to know. I was like, you need to tell your kids. He was like, no, I'm not telling my kids. I am not telling my kids. I'll decide when I'm going to tell my kids, and up until that point, I don't want you to tell anyone. Well, that was super hard for me because all I had was him to talk about it with, and he didn't really want to talk about it.
Yeah, well, that didn't, of course, everything was kind of released. I told the kids, I posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, that was after.
Yeah, but it wasn't that extended period of time. It just took me, a while to...
A couple of weeks?
I don't know if it was that long, but it could very well have been. Time kind of disappeared at that point. You really have no idea. Those are very earth-shattering words. Life-altering words, and I'm not going to deny that my life definitely has been altered during this 10-year run.
One thing Mark did that was so helpful to him wasn't helpful to me, but it was helpful to him. He went back to work. He just went back to work, poured himself into his job, and kind of like life went on, and here I was home by myself with my thoughts not really being able to talk about it. And it was a really rough, period, I would say. And then when he decided to post it on Facebook, I think we had said this in a previous episode, I was like, what? You're going to tell everybody on Facebook? Why would you do such a thing? Anyway, I think that was one of the really good things that happened, that he did post it on Facebook, and he has been super open and wanting to share this journey. So.
Yeah, it just, just like most other things, I think it, and the way Jill said, it takes me a minute to process and think things through, and that's just kind of the way I function, and once I kind of figured it out, that's kind of the way it was, and I always wanted to be able to, once I got my head wrapped around it, be able to encourage people about this podcast. It was very important for us, for example, to launch the podcast during Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. I don't really know how many people will have listened to it during September, just like that TV commercial where there's that guy that breaks stuff up for insurance. I'm not sure what it's about, but he's doing a thing, and he says, I'm sure to get tens and tens of views. So we're probably getting tens and tens of listens. But at this point, if it helps anyone, all for the better. So we are coming close to the end of our time, and I actually have a new section that I want to introduce, and I'm going to talk about it from time to time. This section will pop up from time to time. And then Jill, of course, will have the last word. So the new section that I'm coming up with here, I'm calling the soapbox. And so I'll use it to kind of get on the soapbox and speak about things that I'm indignant about or I think are unfair or certainly kind of off kilter regarding prostate cancer or my situation. So for this episode of the Soapbox, as I mentioned during the, I think maybe the first or the second episode, I'm a sports guy. I like sports. And that I also mentioned that prostate cancer is more prevalent in black men. It's always been interesting, confusing, disappointing, and frustrating that professional men's sports leagues like the NFL, 70% of the players are black. The NBA, 73% of the players are black. Those teams don't show greater support for prostate cancer awareness. This September, which by the time this airs, it would have been last month, is NFL votes. And now for quite a while, a number of years, during the month of October, the NFL would promote breast cancer awareness. Now they have what they call a crucial catch campaign that covers a broad base of cancer. So prostate cancer kind of gets mixed in the mix, but they don't really, I haven't really ever heard them talk about the cancers other than cancer in general. One of the things I should mention is the Prostate Cancer Foundation has what is called the Home Run Challenge with the MLB, but I don't think that that's even widely known, and had I not been poking around on a website, on the Prostate Cancer Foundation's website a couple of years ago, I wouldn't have found out about it. And I think it's basically however many home runs get hit during the season, a certain amount of money is donated to the Prostate Cancer Foundation. I will mention, though, and it's on the website, there was a Fox News report on NFL Sunday morning or something like that, where Shannon Sharp, who's a former football player, for those that don't follow football, I believe he was a tight end or a wide receiver, I'm not sure, but he had mentioned that he had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he's part of a campaign, evidently, run by Janssen, although, of course, nobody's seen the campaign, right? So, I don't know. But, I thought it was very cool of Fox Sports to give him time and that forum to say that. And I think a couple years ago, Al Roker, the weather guy, maybe from NBC, yeah, announced on air and talked about his issue with prostate cancer. So there is stuff happening out there. It just is in fits and starts, and it doesn't really come, it isn't consistent. And as a student of promotion and advertising, you have to be consistent when you're trying to get a message out there. So with that, I will turn it over to Jill for the last word.
Yay, I get the last word. So the last word. I want to say, after what we said about prostate and what it is, obviously after prostate surgery, we were still having sex. So it's possible to have sex without a prostate. That's the good news. Mark, what is episode 4 going to be called?
It's going to follow on the heels of Deer in the Headlights, and it's not so maudlin as it seems, I guess, but it's Am I Gonna Die?
Okay, yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not going to die.
No.
It's rarely going to take you out.
Yes.
So my last word is be strong and persevere. Be brave and courageous. Our website is www.aboveallthereshope.com. Look for this podcast in October. Thanks for joining us.